You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on the Matt Prospect Minute is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Just tired, getting a little lack of sleep, but I guess I shouldn't complain about that to you, huh?
No, you shouldn't. I think I'm on my way to being up for 24 straight hours for like the fourth or fifth time in the last week and a half, but that's okay. We get to talk prospects, and this is a much more interesting system to me than some of the ones we've already talked, including the last one we talked, which was the Mets yesterday. Now getting to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, but before we do that, just want to remind everybody where we can be reached on Twitter. You can reach me at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can reach Matt, MD Tomp, FWFB. And definitely connect with us there because we like to chat and BS about baseball. But let's go ahead and jump into this system, which I was saying before we hit the record button was, there's not, to me, like a top-tier talent necessarily up there, though I think some people would disagree with me with Crawford and Moniak. But this is like a really deep system with some really good players that are going to be fantasy viable at some point.
I can agree with that. I mean, I'm a little higher on Crawford, but Crawford to me is valued a little similar than like we talked about Rosario with the Mets. He's going to be a better real life player than he is fantasy player, that's for sure.
And yeah, and then that's my issue with Crawford. Let's talk about him because I think he's a guy that's going to be up at some point this year.
Yeah, probably after Super 2, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I would assume maybe even August. Sometime in late 2017, but he should be up. So, for those of you who are stashing him in dynasty leagues, I think you will be rewarded at some point, this season. What are your thoughts on JP Crawford as a fantasy player?
He's the main thing about JP Crawford. I mean, we talked about Rosario being like, the player he was, but Rosario did it being one of the youngest in the Eastern League. Like he was the youngest player in AA with the numbers Rosario put up with the Mets last year. And I think him and Crawford are similar. And Crawford was one of the youngest guys in AA last year, in one of the youngest players in AAA in 2016. So he's in the same boat as that. The best offensive tool for Crawford from a fantasy perspective is actually his approach, his plate approach. So if you're in OBP formats, you have to tick him up considerably because, I mean, he's going to get on base, and that's what makes his floor so high. He doesn't have the one outstanding fantasy tool, though, if you play standard 5x5. Like, he might hit – he might be boring, so to speak, but he might hit 280-ish, 10 to 12 homers, 80, 90 runs, 50, 60 RBIs, and 20, 25 steals. I mean, none of those really jump off the page at you, but, I mean, that's a solid player overall. And I think that's what you're looking at here. He's not on the 40-man yet. And, I mean, Freddie Galvis hit 20 home runs last year, so he's built himself a little bit of time to start the year off anyways. And the Phillies aren't – I mean, they're not going to be as bad as they were last year, but they're not openly going for it and trying to win right now. So I wouldn't expect Crawford up till maybe May at the earliest, but I could see him coming up and pushing Galvis to the util spot, or Galvis over to second and Cesar Hernandez to the util spot. But I think if everything clicks, I mean, I think he's going to be the Phillies' shortstop for the next decade.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the reasons why, you know, I mean, to me, this is another instance of, we were talking about Dansby Swanson on an earlier podcast, where, like, Swanson gets a lot of love in the fantasy communities because he's been high up on these prospect lists. Well, he's up high on the prospect list because he's going to be a really, really good, you know, real-life player for a long time. And I think Crawford is the same way. I think Crawford is going to be a fantastic real-life player. Fantasy-wise, I don't – I mean, you know, the 25, you know, plus speed with a good average and a nice walk rate will be useful, especially in OBP leagues. But he's not a superstar. Like, this isn't a guy who at any point in fantasy circles is going to be going in the top two rounds of fantasy drafts.
No, I mean, it's worth noting he's only going to turn 22 this year. So, and I think he'll make his major league debut in his age 22 season as a shortstop. So like we said, I mean, that alludes to everything, him sticking around for a long time. And I mean, as I think more and more leagues now are ditching batting average and jumping toward OBP. I mean, and if you look at his stat line this year, his 250 average all of a sudden turns into a 349 OBP if you're playing in the formats like that. That's a hell of a lot more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also, I mean, with obviously with that profile comes a guy who's going to be a natural leadoff hitter or a top of the order guy, and the Phillies are in position to spend some money, and they have some other talent coming up that might bat in the middle of the lineup, so he should be a good source of runs. I mean, so I think the fantasy value, while there, you have to understand that and be patient. But I think he's going to be a guy you can plug in your lineup for a decade and just leave him there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. What about some of the other guys that might be close?
Well, we saw Jorge Alfaro last year, and it wasn't pretty in the major leagues, to say the least. It was a small cup of coffee, obviously. I've always kind of liked this guy. He came from Texas in the Cole Hamels deal. He's a catcher, and first and foremost, he has two plus skills. His plus skill number one is the elite throwing arm. 44% of the base runners that he tried to steal against ran into that arm this year and didn't live to tell about it. And it results in elite pop times, and that's going to higher the race of floor a little bit because it's going to allow him to get more playing time. He has average speed for a major league player, not saying catch, so it's a mix of a plus speed for a catcher, the athleticism there. There were rumors before this last season that he might have to move to right field. Because the defense behind the plate wasn't good enough, but those seem to have gotten quieter. And I mean, he's going to be the catcher long term now for the Phillies, and it's going to be an interesting profile. The big thing with me is he's got no plate approach, he strikes out too much and doesn't walk. So the thing is, it's going to be batting average dependent is a lot of his value. I think if you can stomach your catcher hitting 240 which you might see here, 240 with an OBP under 300. He also could hit 20 to 25 homers, though. But I think a little added bonus here is he's got a little bit of athleticism, so he could chip in like 8 to 10 steals from the catching position. It adds some value. So I think if you're willing to have an open mind and take an unconventional kind of player, stick him in your catcher spot, I think you might benefit here with a couple of big seasons. He's the type of guy, he's got the explosive tools, the sexy ones, the plus raw power, plus bat speed, and the arm, all the flashy stuff, and the legs for the catcher. But I mean, he struggles at the basic, making contact, and the defense is a little bit rough but improving. So it's a long development curve. I mean, Alfaro's a little bit of prospect fatigue. I was looking information up on him earlier. He's been on Baseball America's top, or he's been on Baseball Prospectus's top 101 fantasy prospect list for the last 5 seasons.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, you'll hear me and Matt mention this all the time. Like, catching prospects take forever. Like, I hate catching prospects in Dynasty. Because, one, they take forever. Two, I'd say a good 50%+ of the time, they don't stay a catcher.
Yeah, or you never hear from them again.
Yeah, or like, you know, we were talking about the on the Brewers prospect preview that we did, you know, like Nottingham. Like Nottingham was like the hot top prospect, you know, at the catcher position last year at this time. And now we're a year later and he is dropped off of everybody's lists. Yep. So, I mean, to me, like never invest in catching prospects. Never, never invest in catching prospects. You know, grab them once they get to the majors.
Yeah, I can't argue with that point at all. I mean, we have so many – for every one success story, I can tell you multiple that, that we're not as lucky.
That we never heard from again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to the Toronto system at some point, but Max Pentecost is, you know, we've been waiting on him for quite a while.
Yeah, and he's got some injuries and all that stuff. But
which happens at the catching position,
yep,
you know.
It's part of it, definitely. So,
who else might be near the major league system?
Well, there's a guy I'm kind of down on, but Nick Williams. He just got added to the 40-man this winter because it's that time for him. He also came over from Texas in that same Cole Hamels trade. He's a guy, I really like the skill set, but he's kind of fallen off a cliff a little bit in making contact in the, lately. It's down, his contact rate in AAA last year was 73%, which isn't egregious. I mean, that's playable. I'd like it to be better. He was 80% and 79% in 2015 in AA. So it took a step back. The thing with him, he ran into some off-the-field stuff, which I kind of heard was kind of blown out of proportion. He got benched for not hustling, and then as a protest for getting benched for not hustling, he came back and didn't hustle again. I don't know. So, like, it was like stuff
I'll
like
show you.
Yeah, and so it's stuff like that. I don't really think that's a makeup. Well, I mean, I guess it's a slight makeup concern, but I think that's just being young.
Yeah, it's definitely a makeup concern, but like, yeah, how many guys at age 20, 21, 22 years old wouldn't react that way?
Yeah, he's stubborn and gotta admire that. I mean, this was the first season he really showed any sign of adversity. I mean, his slash line in AAA was .258, .287, .427. I mean, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the first year he's really shown issues. He has severe issues making contact. He struck out 136 times in 497 at bats. I mean, that's not good enough. That needs to change. But if it does, he's got easy plus raw. I mean, I still think there's an average hit tool in there. He should be able to handle any position in the outfield. He keeps the bat through the zone. It's a really nice swing. Doesn't steal many bases, but he's a plus runner. And stranger things have happened. I mean, the Phillies are always somewhat aggressive, I believe, on the bases. I should have looked that up before I went in there, but they strike me as a team that runs the bases pretty well if they don't steal a lot of bases. I mean, the walk, the 4% walk rate and the 26% strikeout rate don't go well together. I mean, you can have one or the other, I think, but you having both kind of limits your ceiling quite a bit.
Were you asking where the Phillies rank in terms of how much they steal?
Yes.
They were 11th in Major League Baseball last
year. Okay, so that's about right. Right in the middle of the pack. And, I mean, he's athletic enough. I still think he's a potential five-category contributor, but this is a big season for him. I think he needs to show me something a little more concrete as far as numbers. You can only dream on a guy for so long.
Would you try to buy or sell right now?
I would hold. I know that's a hard response, but, I mean, you can't sell off what he did last year, and you can't buy based on what you think he might do because his year was so challenging, you know what I mean? Like, but I do think if he gets it all right with the swing in the plane, I think he's capable of hitting 20 homers, stealing 8-10 bases, and hitting .290/.300. I really do. But there's also a better than zero chance that he never turns into anything and he's playing in Japan in a few years. Like, you know what I mean? It's a wide range of outcomes here, and it's hard to get comfortable to put anything on it, but I do like the overall package a lot. I just, he's really rough around the edges, and that needs to change.
All right. Anybody else that's pretty close?
Yeah, I like Roman Quinn.
Oh, I like Roman Quinn too. I mean, and he got a cup of coffee last year.
Yes, he did, and he needs to stay healthy. That's the only thing that I don't like. I mean, he doesn't hit for power, but he's never been one. That's not part of his game. He's never shown glimpses of it. Like, that's just not on the radar for him. He's yet to play 100 games in a season in his minor league career. That's alarming. He's had pretty significant injuries. He used to be a shortstop. I remember he was a shortstop, and he ruptured his Achilles, came back. They moved him to the outfield. He broke his wrist. He's had some sprains of this and some strains of that. I do think – I mean, let's look at a number here. Like Baseball Prospectus did a good breakdown of him. I hate reading things like this, but I'll give you a sense of what they're talking about, how sneaky valuable a guy with his profile can be. Jared Dyson last year only got 337 plate appearances in the majors, but he stole 30 bags and still finishes a top 60 outfielder. So now, I mean, no reason to think Quinn can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's value here. With Aaron Altair in right field, he's not exactly the burden of health. I mean, Odubel Herrera is in center.
Kendrick is in left. He could be off the team halfway through the season.
And I think their ultimate alignment here would be like Herrera moving over to left field and putting Quinn in center field and just letting him run down everything as long as he stays healthy. But that's a big thing. He doesn't really control the strike zone that great. But a guy with his speed and just general his speed in general and his stolen bases is worth enough and to carry its own weight. If he was to play every day and you assured he wasn't going to get hurt, I would write him down for 60 steals as a possibility. It's that kind of tool, but I don't think he can stay healthy enough, and he's not guaranteed a role right now. So a lot of different variables in that, but I like Quinn. I like his game. One of my big things for this year is I used to kind of write off guys that only were one category guys, but I mean, that one category of stolen bases now for fantasy baseball, that's worth a ton. So you have to kind of open your eyes and be open-minded and go for guys like that. So that's interesting thought, I guess, on Quinn.
Who else we got that's close to the major leagues?
Well, Dylan Cousins, he was in Double A last year. I don't think he comes up this year, he's an interesting case. 70 to 80 raw power on the scale, especially against righties. He's got major platoon issues against lefties, so it won't be as good. He struggles with off-speed pitches and anything with major league break and bend. They also are speculating that he might not be able to catch up to major league velocity, so that's not a good combination. But he tore up Double A last year to the tune of 40 home runs.
Yeah, I mean the power threat is legit,
but a lot of speculative people say that it comes from the ballpark and reading and in Redding, where he hit 29 of his 40 homers. But I would beg to differ that most players hit more home runs at home just because you're more comfortable and all that stuff there. So I'm not as open to chalking it up for the ballpark. The one minor interesting thing here, well, I shouldn't say minor. The one very intriguing thing here was, despite being 6'6 and, you know, every bit of 230 pounds and hitting 40 home runs, he also stole 21 bases. He was 21 for 22 on the base pass last year. Now, I'm not projecting him to steal 20 bases at the major league level or anything like that. And then I do think there's going to be obviously the issues with him getting at base. I think his batting average is going to be severely capped, about 220-ish, 220 to 240 range. But if he can hit 220, 240, hit 25 homers and steal 10 bases, that's worth something, right? I mean, in this mountain, I know, especially for a guy like you, you punt batting average traditionally, right, in your fantasy
league? Yeah, for the most part. I definitely devalue it in every league. But, yeah, for the most part, in a lot of leagues, that's typically a strategy I'll employ as a punt batting average.
So he's a player interesting for you because he can give you the power and a little bit of steals. And
mm-hmm.
I'm more risk-averse as far as that. I think batting average is the one thing I like to draft because you can't really make up batting average if you're – you know what I mean? In the season, if you're down in roto leagues, batting average is really hard to make up.
Not that this is a strategy podcast by any stretch of the imagination, because we're pretty much just talking about prospects within a single system. But, you know, you can't take, like, a ton of these guys. Like, punting batting average isn't about, like, I'm going to take all the guys with bad batting average when you punt steals and you just don't draft closers. You just devalue it to the point where it doesn't really matter. because there's a lot of variance in batting average from year to year, from player to player.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And that's, you know, that's why batting average is the flukiest stat of all, right? I mean,
And that's why a lot of leagues are moving to on base percentage
because which is more stable. Yeah,
which is a much better barometer of, you know, an actual hitting eye.
Yeah, well, I guess that's an interesting discussion for another podcast. But I mean, that's the skinny on Cousins. I guess is like he's valuable, but especially in contexts like that, he's more valuable to guys like you who do that. Another guy that's close. He's also in Double A. He hit 38 homers in Double A. It was Rhys Hoskins. 38 homers would be a record, but Cousins hit 40 this year, so it's not. And that's another thing. That's why people are skeptical about the Eastern League and that ballpark, because two guys hit 78 homers combined. I think Hoskins is gonna. He could stick at first base though. The defense is. He's a little bit slower and he has a below average arm. But he should be able to grab everything that comes to him at first, and there's nowhere else to move. So if you can't play first, you're kind of in trouble. But I do think the hit tool is average, the power is above average. Athleticism isn't there, but you're talking about an organization that played Ryan Howard at first base for the last decade, so athleticism isn't really a priority. I mean, it's a new regime now, so they might be trying to get away from that. But I had to get my Ryan Howard dig in there somewhere.
I hope Ryan Howard's listening to this podcast.
I hope so. He's got nothing else to do.
Tweet
right?
Tweet at him, Ryan. You know, at MD Tomp FWFB. Go ahead and send some hate.
Another tweets. Reason why I always dislike him is because despite hitting 190 every year, he hits 8 home runs against the Cardinals in the 6 games they play against them. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's from St. Louis too, so he had to.
St. Louis needs a first baseman.
No, they don't.
They could use one.
They got Matt Adams.
Yeah, but then they could move him to second.
Yeah, definitely could do that.
Or third.
Yeah. No, no.
All right, where are we at? We're on Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah, I guess that's enough Rhys Hoskins talk, but I guess, I mean, the system's deep, as you could tell. Now, we've been talking about the system for, 20 minutes now, and we're finally getting into the guy they picked number one overall last year in the draft.
So yeah.
That's a little bit of depth. It's Mickey Moniak. I'm not as enamored with Moniak as I should be, I guess, for number one pick. I mean, yeah, he's a long time away, which is part of it. Looking at that birthday, 1998, that makes me feel so old.
It should. It should make you feel old because it makes me feel really old.
Yeah, well, safe, I guess the word I need to say is safe doesn't always mean boring, and boring doesn't always mean bad. So I guess when you look at Moniak, he's a guy who's going to hit. The hit tool is plus. He's going to be a threat to hit 300 with 20 homers. Or, excuse me, with 20 steals and enough homers to make up for, like, where you're not getting anywhere else. I think 300, about 10, 12 homers, 20 steals is a realistic outcome for Moniak, which is nice. I'm not sure if that's a first overall pick for me, if that's the ultimate upside, which that's still good. But you know what I mean? I guess it was a weak draft, and with them – it was a weak draft at the top, but it was deep, so they went a little bit less up the top to save some money, which allowed them to go get guys like next guy we'll talk about is Kevin Gowdy. He went in the second round. He's got some polish and projection. He's a high school arm, 6'4", ultimate frame, 93-95, sliders, potential plus pitch, needs a better changeup and curveball. He's not that being the high school pitcher with two potential plus pitches, obviously his changeup's behind because you don't have to throw it too much. So that's you need to make up for lost time on that pitch. For a high school arm, he should move relatively fast, but he's still a high school arm. So he's got a lot of risk. Scott Kingery is an offensive-minded second baseman. He's a nice guy to follow. Cornelius Randolph, not the sexiest profile at all, but he's good in deeper leagues. He's a guy that's going to – the hit tool is – plus, and I think he's like left field only, but not a lot of steals, but he's going to hit for healthy averages and could hit 10 to 12 homers and just be a solid Howie Kendrick type. You know what I mean? That carries some value in deeper leagues and NL only. There's a lot of nice arms in here. Franklin Quilome, Adonis Medina, Sixto Sanchez, all good arms that are They have their warts. They're all real skinny, young righties. 6'1". Kilome is 6'6", 175. Medina is 6'1", 185. Sanchez is 6', 180. They're a bunch of, you know, they're all looking to grow all the ad velocity. They all have their warts with command and control right now. But they all project mid-rotation guys for me.
But then they're all like 18 years old too, and so like they're super far away. They, you know, and a lot could go right and a lot could go wrong in between.
I guess if I have to own one of them, I would own Franklin Kilome, because he's got the out pitch and he has potential to be a number two starter in fantasy. It's unlikely to hit. I mean, but I think that's possible. But you keep in mind, all these guys were in low A last year or A ball.
Mm-hmm.
So take your time with those guys. Phillies have no incentive to push their arms. But, I mean, all in all, I mean, I think this is a deep system. A lot of nice talent scattered throughout. They got some – they've done well in Latin America the last couple of years. Archimedes Gamboa, shortstop out of the 2014 international class. Long ways away. He's got some speed. Hit some gap power. Your boy, Jalen Ortiz. Big kid, young kid. He's only 17. To start the year last year, he was.
Anyway. Massive. He is absolutely massive.
6'2", 260, but he's bigger than that.
Yeah, he's way bigger than that.
The power
at least,
is
at least height-wise.
The power is the tool, but the hope is that he can keep that and not lose the little bit of athleticism he does have. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a chance that he right now they have him as an outfielder, and they want him to stay that way, obviously, because the power will play anywhere. The first base, he could still provide some value because the power is so prodigious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one guy to watch for is Jose Pujols this year, because he's raw, but he's got big power and a strong arm, so he's a prototypical right fielder. And he should move into that double-A ballpark in Reading this year, so he could be a guy to hit 30, 35 home runs you could pick up and then trade. So keep that in mind. That's the thing I like to do, too, is prey on some of the – people that don't pay attention as much to the minor league guys that dislike to scout the stat line, pick up a guy like that after a big season and trade him. Like, that's my plan with Dom Smith this year. That's my plan to a lesser extent with Jose Pujols. So that's just another way you can use the minor leagues to your advantage. But all in all, I think that's pretty good for the Phillies.
All right. Well, that will wrap us up then. Like I said at the beginning, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Justin Mason, FWFB. Matt is at MD Tomp, FWFB. Please give the show a rate review, and if you give us 5 stars on iTunes and send me a screenshot or a copy of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at @fantasybenefits, I will make sure you get into a listener league and or are eligible to win some prizes that we'll be giving away, doing a couple free giveaways later on in the off season. So definitely do that for us. It really helps us out. And that'll wrap us up for Matt and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.